not effective.
Yeah, you're gonna have to wait an hour. Or so.
Guys, my wallet's so far.
I mean, if you get pregnant,
name your baby after me.
Do you see it around you, Kate?
I see your purse. Is it?
Yeah, it's in there. Thank you.
That wasn't really that far.
Well, it was. It required you reaching.
Hello, and welcome to a podcast of one's own. I'm Kate, and I'm here today with Kara.
Hi.
And Sky.
Hi.
And today we're going to be talking about the film Cloud Atlas, which I haven't seen, but they saw together. Fine. It's not a big deal or whatever. I was just at home while they went out to see it. It's fine. It's not a big deal. I did read the book, though, so I guess I can contribute in that way.
And you read it without us?
Yeah, like one does with books. Whatever.
Books aren't a very social activity, hey? I mean, I guess there's book
clubs.
They
can be if you read them to each other.
I love reading out loud.
I hate it. Yeah, you're the worst.
I like being read to.
No, that's what I meant. I mean, I enjoy it. I think it's funny to read things out loud, but I would
rather
be read to.
Especially if you need the voices and stuff and whatnot.
I was actually thinking about this the other day in terms of, like, justifying my habits, and one of the things is, like, video games is actually can be a very social thing to do,
totally,
can watch movies together, but video games, you can talk during them, and you can be a little more communicative without ruining the experience.
I mean, as I told you before, there's this paper who I forget who it's by, who pointed out...
We'll find it for the show notes, maybe.
Yeah, I will actually find it. It is a really amazing paper about young girls playing video games,
right.
And how they love it on a social level.
Yes, like when you and I play Diablo, we just talk to each other the whole time,
and it makes it so much more fun.
Yeah.
Like, I love playing those online games with my friends, and just talking the whole time.
But
and then also killing things.
Yes.
But also like playing it on my own, but it is funner with other people.
Of course. Because things are. Except for reading, which is worse. And you're wrong.
Worse or different?
Worse.
Uncomparable. Such a tangent, guys.
Regardless of the nature of art. I originally wanted to ask a question about drag because of some of the things that happened in the movie, but then I remembered that Movember was happening, because it's November, and I wanted to basically ask impressions of Movember, what we think about it from a feminist perspective.
As Kara and Kate both know, I don't like mustaches.
So you hate Movember.
So, like, aesthetically, you're opposed...
That's all I have to say,
so you're,
Kara.
So you're pro-prostate cancer, is exactly what you're saying.
You know, I think it's interesting. I'm going to point to, in the show notes, we'll link to, like, actual theorists who talk about, like, activism, and especially with breast cancer awareness, there's been recently a lot of work about it, and the movie about it, a new documentary, I forget the title.
Oh, I thought, like, a fiction film.
Also put it in the show notes.
It was, like, a fiction film called, like,
no,
Aware, and
no.
It was, like, Reese Witherspoon is on.
No, it's a documentary about the pinkwashing of breast cancer awareness. So, yeah, we'll point to those. I'm not one to speak on, like, the actual ethics of activism, because I don't know enough about it.
But what's the vague point?
The vague point of nothing to do with that.
Okay.
But my vague point about Movember is, like, I think it's, you know, how do you guys feel that it's something that women aren't allowed to be included in?
Mm-hmm.
Like, I know women don't get prostate cancer. Like, and some men do get breast cancer, and, you know, we glide over that and think of it just, like, just save boobies. So, you know, women can't be
and
part
not
of
boobies.
It.
Man boobs are called moobs.
Go
on.
You know, women can't be a part of it, and there's, like, this active, why not just body hair? Why is it just a mustache? Where did it come about? Maybe I don't know how it came about, and that's a lot of issue, but there's also on the internet of, like, women trying to support and guys kind of shooting it down of being like, body hair, that's gross.
Hilarious. Because they have mustaches, and mustaches are gross.
Yeah. It's, like, the only thing us women, us female-bodied women, can't do.
I think that I know of a few people who do no-shave Novembers and just, like, allow some part of their body hair to grow.
Very interesting.
And I mean, it's not something I plan to do. But
I rarely shave anyway.
Yeah.
It's not that different for me. I mean,
no,
there
yeah,
are
just
women
a
who,
run of the real month.
I would just forget
women,
and I would shave.
Yeah,
and then I'd be like,
women
oh, God.
Can grow facial hair though. I mean, and that's, I guess I just said that women can't, but women can. A lot of women have mustaches
yeah.
and like, you know,
I'm thinking eyebrows would be amazing if I just let my eyebrows keep growing forever.
This is exactly how my eyebrows are.
Would mine would be a bushman. I should maybe do that next November when
that's
I have
amazing.
A good start. Yeah.
But so I think that's interesting in the politics of, like, but why can't men just have something? But if it's about raising awareness, you want women to donate too and women to pledge too, so why
but
is there a...
I think you could say, though, I agree with you and I don't like November. But I think you
because
could,
of mustaches.
Because of mustaches, but also because, like, it's totally pointless, and a lot of people who participated in it don't even really know what it's for. Like, I mean, it's very divorced from the actual fundraising goal. But the other thing is that, like, you could say, I guess to play devil's advocate, that essentially part of the idea of the facial hair piece is to make the fundraising very, very, very visible, right?
Yeah,
like, and if
sure.
you just didn't shave your legs or your armpits or something like that, like, nobody would really... No, for a month, or it wouldn't be as visible.
I have a couple
but
points I want to make about this, and one of them is that the main like website that does donations for this, what you do is like people take photos, progress photos of their mustaches, and
mm-hmm.
you pitch towards them, and obviously that is open
yeah.
to anyone pitching. So it's the people that are like showing off their faces, like the yeah. aesthetic visual face of it, that is exclusively men.
Mm-hmm. Both are expected to donate,
but not
sure.
the participation.
Yeah.
I also want to say that, like, there's, like, I have feelings about Movember, and a lot of it is just that there's, like, a bandwagon aspect to it that is really divorced from actually raising awareness, and the awareness part comes into it less than it should, but a thing that I actually think is quite great is the idea that, like, prostate cancer, as recently as probably in our lifetime, maybe slightly before, was something that was overlooked because it was embarrassing for men to talk about their prostates and to get them checked, and the idea of awareness for prostate cancer is actually something that I think is really valuable, because if I can speak for men, there
as,
can,
as
we're known to do, there was and probably still is in a lot of cultures that aren't my own, a lot of reticence about discussing parts of male anatomy, and so doing something that is as mainstream as this, I think, is maybe normalizing the discussion a little bit, and hopefully some people are just even just talking to their doctor. So, like, not the practice of Movember, but just the idea
uh-huh.
of it, and the idea of it
yeah.
being as popular as it is might be good just for, like, the comfort level of some men.
You know, there's an interesting... I think that's a really, really good point. And I think it's important to acknowledge that potentially Movember has done some important things like that. There's a really interesting... Or not really, I guess, so interesting, but there's an...
I'm excited for this one
yeah,
now.
Yeah, continue, please.
This seems like it's going to be great.
What I was going to say is that there's an undertone to Movember associated with growing a mustache that is really tied to one's manhood and kind of self-worth and masculinity, and that is kind of... I mean, it's exclusionary to women because of the whole facial hair thing, but also there's just this weird, really, really misogynistic undertone to it sometimes.
Yeah, I mean, again, I want to say that women can grow facial hair.
Yes,
and we don't
yes.
want to have that, like, only men can, as much as I totally said that before. And I guess why I'm stressing it, because I don't actually believe that. But it is a sign of, like, masculinity, you know what
yeah.
I mean? Like, you're not a real man unless you can grow facial hair. And, like, you know, hitting puberty, all the young boys are like, I got my facial hair before anyone else did.
And then they keep it on their face, even though it's that weird little finger of it.
Yeah,
and then
exactly.
you still kiss them because you don't have other choices.
And
yeah.
then, like, 20 years later, they're still talking about how they were the first ones to get their beard.
I got my boobs before everyone, though, and I bring it up sometimes, so
I've
I don't know.
I've never heard you say it, and we've known each other for a while, so that's really
well,
surprising.
Let it
I just
want to
make
now.
You feel bad.
How do
about,
you know when
about
I got
how
my
quickly?
Boobs?
I don't know, I guess I haven't actually brought
it
up.
Do you just assume because they haven't gotten bigger since I was in grade 5?
I don't know, I'm not sure I do have that, but I think I've said it a couple times. I'm just not sure that it's necessarily, like, I think people always have characteristics they're proud of. And developmental ones,
yeah,
and maybe,
like
that's
like,
not specifically gendered.
Why are you proud of getting your boobs?
Oh my god, have you seen them? They're glorious, and they've been around for ages.
I don't know, they're really big. And I guess they're old now,
I'm just,
too.
I'm just saying, yeah. Because I'm old, they are also old. That's right.
Sliding
towards the grave.
There is a difference between, I think, joking about getting your boobs, or even your beard, and this sort of, like,
I'm just
misogynistic undertone.
The thing is, you're saying misogynistic undertone. I just could you like maybe like identify?
Yeah, why does it hate women?
I mean, I can't.
Straight.
So I'm just the thing is, I've actually never thought of it having a misogynistic undertone.
I think it is. I think a few things. One is that it is very exclusion. It excludes women, and it's not because women can't grow facial hair, but because women growing facial hair is considered gross. Yeah. And even if women try to get involved in other ways, like you said, they're often kind of cast out. And there's this sort of very,
But you cast out men for having mustaches.
I did. Yeah. All of them.
I want to say that's
an aesthetic choice.
Yeah.
On a sexual level.
I think that there's a degree to which, like, the way it excludes women could be read as misogynistic, but I also think that there's something to be said for, like, creating a space where men can talk to each other.
Yeah, totally. I mean, like, of course it can exclude women, and I think that there's spaces where they should. I think probably what we were talking about with, like, beards is that it's still reinforcing masculine stereotypes mm-hmm. of, like, what masculinity is. And, like, even if you have prostate cancer and, like, somehow have your manhood diminished because of that, you can still grow a beard, and that means you're a fucking man. Like,
yeah,
it's the same, it's propagating the same stereotypes.
So
who cares about the women's?
No, that's,
like,
that's
because it's built in, like, because everything's kind of built into patriarchy, you know, a signifier of masculinity like that is also a signifier of, like, the subordination of women, I would say. Like, if it's signifying kind of, like, how manly men are, it's also signifying how superior they are at times, I think.
I'm not sure I actually see that as, like, being inherently true. I think that what's the more interesting point, I'm gonna hire archives your points. I'm gonna not actually do that. That's terrible of me.
But I don't think that's true. I don't think that just because patriarchy exists means women are less than men.
I actually think it's more interesting to discuss, like, sort of the misandry of it, like, that it kind of seems to hate men a little bit. That's interesting. Or it seems
I wouldn't
to be...
say it's misandry, because I think it loves men and is
celebrating them.
But I think
we're doing so good at words today.
It is definitely reinforcing one.
Yeah, okay. So maybe it's just, what's the word I'm looking for? Reductive.
Yeah, totally.
Okay.
Yeah.
I think that's really interesting.
And now link it into Cloud.
Oh my god, I didn't see the movie. Did someone have a mustache? Go. It must have been November with Ben Whishaw's stash. Am I right? More like
Ben
Stash Saw.
So
he's
beautiful.
So foxy.
It so drives me crazy how beautiful he is.
I know,
is.
And he's so, like, he's whipped thin, but he works it.
I know, yeah, and I don't usually like really thin guys, and now
no,
I fucking do.
It's because he always dresses like a champ. Like, he dresses
to
his body.
Yeah, he's really beautiful, and he has this really beautiful emotive face, and his voice is really great.
Who's,
like, he has a great
who is this
voice.
Person?
This is the gay one.
This is, yeah, the composer.
Oh, yeah, he's super
the gay cool. one.
The gay one. Yeah.
You're welcome, world. He was like, I was watching The Hour, the British show.
Oh, it's really bad.
It's, yeah, it just doesn't matter to me at all. I know, McNulty's there too, and I just thought it was going to be.
And he's really bad in it.
Yeah,
he's and just, it sounds like his accent is fake, but he's really British.
I know, it's so funny when that happens. But I, like, after that, I, you know, was trying to, like, research Ben Whishaw some more and got some good photos going.
He's also in Perfume.
He is, the one that Tom Tucker, one of the three directors of the
Twiker?
Film.
Is that how you say it?
Tickwer. It's not Tickwer. It's definitely not Tickwer. That sounds Twiker. I don't know. We both listen.
I think it's Twiker.
I think it is,
but
too.
But it's a confusing last name.
Man, it's German, man. That's so hard for us in our English language.
Yeah, it's not the guy who made Run, Lola, Run, right?
It is.
Yeah.
And Perfume, Story of a Murderer, starring Ben Whishaw.
See, I knew so little about what you guys were talking about, and you went so fast for me there that I thought you were talking about the literal object of Perfume.
Yeah, he's a perfumier.
And that he is somehow involved, and I didn't know why, you were talking about Tom Tykwer or whatever.
Yeah.
I just wanted to be involved.
You're like, I wear perfume!
I'm drooling. It's so ridiculous.
Well, we've gone on worse tangents, I suppose.
Sometimes I can't keep up.
So...
As you were.
What did we think of Cloud Atlas?
Just in general about... Okay, so we should describe... Oh, no, we already did. Of, like, Kate's read the book.
Alone.
But
us.
Both Sky and I haven't read the book, but we saw the movie.
Yes.
So we're coming from different places, which I think is really interesting.
Yeah.
The movie is not good. It's boring. I mean, we can go more into detail of, like, why, but that's my initial, like, I was really excited to see it because I heard such beautiful things about the book about how it's, you know, it's a beautiful, beautiful...
The book is gorgeous, absolutely. You
know, experimental novel thing. Mm-hmm. And I listened to the Nerdist podcast with the Wachowskis and Tom...
T.
Spiker.
How was he involved in this?
He's a director.
They tri-directed.
Each of them did two storylines. I don't know if anyone knows which one, who did what. I think Tom Twyker did...
Wish Oz.
Did he?
I believe so.
I thought so, based on the aesthetic, because the only one that I know that he actually did was the old folks home one.
Mm. I thought he did the Wish Oz one,
but I don't actually know. Sorry. But it would be interesting to know who did who. Anyway.
Yes. But you didn't like the film. And so in what way did you find it was boring? Is that its main failure?
I think its main failure. Okay. Well, one is that I do love experimental narratives and I would really like to read the book in this way, but I do think that the way as an adaptation it was a bit of a failure in the sense that for me what bothered me is that the whole film was full of gesturing towards content and not fleshing anything out, which might be interesting in the novel, but in the film was just frustrating.
I need you to elaborate on that.
So what I mean is Kara, what did I point out? I pointed out, for example, the really future-y one with Halle Berry and Tom Hanks.
Tom
Hanks.
In all of them, aren't they?
Yeah, they're not
no,
in all
not
of
all.
Them.
Oh, okay.
So Hugo Weaving is playing this weird devil-y character that's on Tom Hanks's shoulder, whispering and telling him to do all these bad things. But that would be very interesting in a fuller narrative, but it's just kind of there and it just sort of hangs there and you're what the fuck is this about? And what is the function of this character? Why bring him in at all? Mm-hmm. And that happened for me a lot in the film.
And there's a lot of, just bless you, positioning these six stories together into one feature film, you assume, rightly or not rightly, that there's supposed to be something linking them, and then there is something linking them, that they all have the birthmark, and then they also are played by the same actors, so you assume it's some sort of reincarnation. Mm-hmm. So you think that there's going to be, a main... thing put across about it's all about connectivity or something, but that wasn't hit home very well.
Mm-hmm.
And we talked about it before, and Sky had the issue, as you just said, they don't feel complete narratives on their own. You feel you want to flesh out each of these individual six, but I kind of disagree. I don't think that because you put them all in one together, they shouldn't be fleshed out on their own. They should complete each other.
Yeah.
So, and I think that's probably what they were going to do. I mean, if they're complete things, they should be separate short films.
I agree with you because it could be either fleshing it out as a complete narrative or the others could fill in the gaps and indicate the function of some of the content in the other narratives.
Yeah.
And neither of those things happen.
And I think it would be amazing. And I'm sure what they were trying to do, if I can speak to what they were trying to do, but what you can tell from some of the cutting of someone goes up to a door and knocks and then you cut to a different story and someone opens the door. So you kind of get the idea that that's what they're going for emotionally to have the story all come together into one story,
mm-hmm.
But that doesn't happen. They work very independently of each other,
yeah.
mm-hmm.
And that is probably its biggest failure.
What I find really interesting about that is that, the biggest difference that I can tell between the book and the film, and the thing I loved the most about the book, is that, the movie is a non-linear structure, and that's, right?
No, it's very linear.
It's pseudo-linear. It's supposed to be non-linear, but it's packaged into, a mainstream linear-esque structure.
It's very linear. We've seen that sort of, that thing before in, Crash, in, different movies of having, five different narratives, and they all come together.
But, does it cut between them in a, predictable order, or is it, they kind of come whenever they come?
But each story is individual, is individually linear, and it doesn't interrupt... its linearity.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
If it interrupted its linearity, that would be interesting. And I think, that would be an amazing thing to, have one story and then go to a totally different way and, there's creative experimental things that you could do that's obviously not for, the mainstream cinema.
Sure.
I see what you mean. It's not just one...
Yeah, because how it played out in the, do you know about the...
Well, I want to know because it's, half of them start and then you have a long middle section and then another... set of stories, right? That are all kind of intertwined?
Well, no. How it works is that the narratives are like nesting dolls, And so the first one you read doesn't finish until the last chapter of the book, and the second one is the second last chapter.
Right.
And then the future chapter is the one that's told incomplete. But they're basically all divided
what
in half.
What future one? The one...
The second future, the most futuristic future.
Uh-huh.
So basically, like, they are moving, like, chronologically through time. But then, like, my favorite part about them, and I think...
Oh, and they go back to them. I see.
Yeah, and
I
then
see.
At the end they return to them. But the device they use to move through this is that the future narrative is the only one that seems to exist independently of the other ones. And then, like, in the future narrative, the other one exists. And within that narrative,
yeah.
the other one exists.
That's
but all of
beautiful.
Them, it's amazing.
I wish they did that, because I think that would be such a beautiful film to see.
And the thing is about that is that when I heard they were doing the adaptation, I was really interested because... Obviously, in the book, they're all still just prose, but they're prose that gesture towards one is also prose, one is a letter, one
yeah.
is a film, one is a manuscript, one is, like, a future holograph, and...
You kind of see that in someone's writing.
Yeah.
Someone's reading something, someone's, it's voiceover in letters, but also the way, you know, film works, it's all...
Yeah.
Stereotypical narrative film.
Of course. What, I guess, like, I think that when you guys said that the movie... was boring, and, like, when other people have been saying that it's confusing, I feel like it must be a huge failure that what I found so astonishing about the book was this, like, structure I'd never seen in something before, where the stories all were, like, felt really whole and felt really complete, but also acknowledged themselves to be fictional and, like, varying, like, 7 degrees of fictionalization.
And also, I mean, it seems like from that, having not read the book, complemented each other
yes.
and, like, made it feel like a complete thing because you have a series of revealing. So as you said, like, you have that long middle part in the future,
mm-hmm.
And then you go back and you find out more and you find out more and you find out
yeah,
more.
And you find out...
And I think that revealing was not done well in the film
right.
whatsoever.
And that's what it was.
And
you
I
sort
think
of...
the big reveal was that the goddess that they were praying to,
mm-hmm.
who I don't ever remember seeing in the movie up until it was revealed, or even being mentioned, was that Neo-Soul girl.
The Somni.
Sure,
yeah.
Neo-Soul girl. So
yeah, Neo-Soul. Was
and we have a lot of gender things to talk about with her.
Okay. I guess
we should talk about structure a bit more, because that's very interesting. I mean, I wonder what the decision was to not have it like that, because I think that's a totally legitimate structure.
Well,
of
it
a
was
movie.
It was fantastic. I think so too. I think it'd be quite easy to accomplish because
yeah.
there's a linearity, but a linearity that's like,
and
I,
it's not too out of the world.
It's
you know what I
well,
mean. Because they go one to the other to the other,
and it's very very like there's a moment when I was first reading the book that like there's an instance in the second story when you realize. What like that the previous story is a story within that universe, and so you suddenly understand how the structure of this book will go.
So
right.
beautiful.
And it's,
I'm gonna cry.
No, I teared up when I read it because it was one of those moments, and it's listed. I listed as one of my favorite books because it had a moment in it, this moment where I realized literature can do something that it hadn't done for me previously, and so.
So beautiful.
And I was surprised that they abandoned that structure, because that structure is what everyone gestures to when they talk about... I think it's the first thing everyone sort of talks about when they're talking
yeah.
about how good the book
yeah.
is.
Yeah.
And I think that would really, really work to connect these stories.
It also...
Because, you know, you get the little ideas of it, of like, oh, this is the guy traveling on a boat who's dying, who's writing these letters. And you're like, yeah, he's reading them. But
yeah.
it wasn't a very big plot point. And
yeah.
you're like, but if that's what's connecting them, why isn't it connecting it more?
And what I like about it, too,
yeah,
is that, like...
It did. You didn't get the, like... I think that, you know, it's almost like you got this false sense of, like, linearity. Like, they're connected in a linear way rather than seeing that one is encapsulating the other.
Yeah.
Like, one is actually embracing and fitting around the other.
Totally.
You felt like they were pervading it, like, one straight line through these stories rather than the stories kind of wrapping around each other.
Well, what I think, like, one of the, what I consider to be one of the main themes of the book, aside from, like, and it is broadly about connection, it is about, like, eternal recurrence, but there's also a sense of the idea of being able to connect to things that are not appreciably real in your presence.
Right.
And in your present. And so, like, mm-hmm. the idea of being, like in the way that I am connected to characters in the book are connected to characters that are fictional to them as well.
Yeah.
And I feel like the movie seems to have failed to address that several of the characters in the canon material are fictional within the canon material. Like, they don't exist in parallel. They exist...
This book sounds like the best book in the whole
world. The book is so good.
It really
it's so good. And
I
really want to read it now.
I know, me too. I'll but wait, I have a question. In the book, does it go chronologically in time?
Yeah, so it starts out with the boat, and then it goes to Ben Whishaw being a stud, and then it goes to...
Okay, but what you say about, like, the theme of it, you didn't say the word interconnectedness, but you said connectedness.
It's connected, but I don't think it is interconnectedness in the same way. There's a way that they're, like, they are broadly connected over a space, but the person in the seventh story doesn't know anything about the first story.
Right.
And so the connectedness, like, there's some thematic stuff, but there's not the same way that, like, story one is connected to story seven.
For sure. So there's some sort of connectedness and, like, feeling a presence, whatever you said, I'm agreeing with, for a book that I didn't read. I agree with you. But for the movie, I mean, that's what I thought it was going to hit home, and it kind of gestured to that, but really ended up being more about, like, general oppression. And I'm not sure if that's like a really big theme
like,
in the book.
Like, sort of activism or, like, joining, like, aid movement.
Like, very leftist agenda.
And also, like, I guess maybe I'm, like, kind of distorted by this because, you know, the election was yesterday, but, like, there was this activism with this, like, it was, like, a forward, we're going to this thing to, like, fix.
Yeah.
We are moving forward as a movement, which is, like, not the way it sounds like that narrative is supposed to be shaped. Like, not just one straight line.
Mm-hmm. Part of what I actually liked, and I feel like I'm not sure if the movie did this as well, about the book, is that the prose really, really varies between the stories because the genres are very different.
Mm-hmm. Oh, it does not. There is definitely a cohesive, as much as there are three directors, and the one in the old folks' home did not fit in. Mm-hmm. It was very different tonally.
So different.
But the other ones, but the way it looked, it was still...
Like it had...
It forced a... look.
Okay.
And it forced a style. And so it felt cohesive in that.
And it had, like, the same soundtrack running.
Which,
underneath.
Exactly,
like,
yeah.
One score that built consistently for three straight fucking hours.
Mm-hmm. To be fair, that score is
Cloud Atlas.
Yeah, the Cloud Atlas Sextet, yeah. I keep on saying seven stories. It's obviously only six. Like, I don't know why I keep on gesturing towards seven, but...
But I think that you know, I understand why they did that, to make it more accessible to people and make it seem like a connected story, but if anything, it just made it feel really flat and really long.
For me, it seems like like abandoning the idea of diverse genres.
Yeah.
And especially diverse genres in diverse ages.
And, like, the diversity, but there's still something connecting through those diversity, is totally gone out the window.
Well, I think that they just tried to make it more accessible and fresh it up, basically, is what happened. Like, they tried to, like, make it very, very linear and very, like, consistent, so that people didn't feel like they didn't know what was happening, but actually it made it worse and more confusing.
Yeah. I don't think, it's interesting that, like, people talk about the movie being confusing, because the book isn't. Like, the book is very structured. If anything, it's one of the more structured books that's out there, because the structure is so visible.
Yeah.
And so...
Well, I mean, I think about that versus, like, stream of consciousness writing, and you're like, I don't know where I am or what
I'm
doing.
Exactly.
It's, like, very clear.
And this it's structured in sort of the same way Memento is structured, where there's such a rule to it that the structure is what people talk about.
Right.
Because it's the most visible, like, salient part of it. Anyway, regardless...
We haven't talked about gender at all.
Yeah, so I guess I can take a step back now, because I have no opinions about gender in the book. I think the book is beautiful and perfect. But I would like to know your thoughts, because, like, probably I overlooked something, because it's never the first thing I read for.
Well, let's start with the Sonmi.
Sonmi?
But I also, don't let
Unless
me
they change the name, I don't know.
Don't let me forget. I think it is that. I also want to talk about the guy dressing up as in drag.
I obviously
because
think...
Because that's super problematic to me.
I wanted to ask also about that. Oh, and I think that the idea of having the same actors play different roles is actually terrible.
I guess we should talk about that, too. So much to talk about.
In terms of...
Again, I mean, when it comes to gender, we're not going to have that much to say, because we all agree.
Again?
All of us.
Maybe.
Who don't even know the opinions.
I wanted to say, too, that I think that choosing to have the same actors play different roles is a failure, because part of what I liked about the book is that these people are so distinct, and it's not, aside from, like, the physical marker that seems kind of arbitrary, and in one of the stories, the physical marker isn't on the protagonist, it's on some, like, secondary character mentioned in passing.
What are you talking about?
The birthmark that all the protagonists of the story have.
Oh, it was on someone in passing?
Yeah, like, one of them didn't have it. It was, like, someone in a hotel room. I don't remember the exact thing. Like, that protagonist didn't have it. Someone else did, and that person didn't matter. And so I feel like the birthmark was actually kind of a joke in the narrative. I feel like it a little bit was talking about the arbitrary way we force connectedness or whatever, or like the signals we find to feel connected to people.
That's so interesting.
I think this it was book. That. I don't know. The book's amazing. But this is the only thing I'm going to keep repeating. But so having the actors seems to be too much. Like imposing a sameness across.
Yeah.
And it feels
and
like...
And all having the birthmark, and it all supposed to mean something.
Yeah.
I don't know what it means.
Instead of just having them all be distinct, which is what was cool about the book, is that these characters, it's not like they all, like, liked the color purple, and that's, you know, it didn't talk about past lives in the same way.
Yeah.
It just had them all be different, and I like that about it. You can kind of impose your own meaning onto that more than you can when the director says, Hugo Weaving is this, and this, and this, and this.
Yeah.
And therefore this character is the same.
I mean, I honestly, I don't mind the characters being recast into different roles. I actually think that's kind of interesting because you don't really get to see it very often.
I like it in other things.
But, I mean, obviously, in terms of race, I wish they didn't.
Yeah.
But, and in terms of gender, I wish they didn't. Or sex, look, or whatever. But I actually thought it was kind of interesting. But I also wish that there was, and maybe this is just a drive of, like, making it more comprehensible, but, like, I wish that there was some consistency to, like, who was cast as who, because I felt like that there was supposed to be. And in some cases, you could see who was cast as who and their kind of, like, storyline. And I guess the biggest example of that is Jim Sturgess's character.
Also kind of stud.
Yeah, not in the movie. but Jim Sturgess's love with the Korean girl.
Mm-hmm.
And that's through different stories, or at least two different stories. But then you kind of get, like, Hugo Weaving is always an evil character, so I understand that. But then Tom Hanks is sometimes good and he's sometimes bad, and I'm confused why he's reincarnated into this person.
Yeah.
And so I wish there was a little bit more cohesiveness.
But, you know, I actually
there.
Think that's really interesting, and I never really thought about it, but the idea that, like, the you know, I mean, it's a little moralistic, but the idea that there are, like, people who are consistently bad and people who are consistently good throughout this narrative, and then people who are, like, sometimes bad and sometimes
self,
no.
No. I mean...
no.
No. We're not doing this now. But I think that's really interesting, because I guess the idea that there's, like, yeah, like, more variability for some people and less
and
variability.
That,
and I think
if the
nice
film was
approach.
About that in any other way, that would be really interesting. But if it's just about that in that one
it.
Way...
Yeah.
I actually... Sucks. I guess this is the least, like, I'm, as someone who, like, spends a lot of time with films and with adaptation and stuff, it's, like, the least acceptable point for me to make, but I actually think that the directors, like, choosing which characters are the people who recur by putting the actors onto it changes the meaning of things so radically that I'm kind of, I'm off-put by it. I'm off-put by them having made the decision that this character is always... This
I don't
soul
mind,
or whatever.
And I know that you preface that in a certain way. I do think it's funny, but I think that they have complete autonomy over the film.
And totally they do.
I know. And as much as we're talking about, like, how beautiful the book is and how it should have been more like the book, like, of course, they should be able to do whatever they want. And so I think it's interesting, if anything, instead of saying, like, it's interesting to look at how they have the power to decide and how they have the authority and how they and why they choose it.
Yeah.
I mean, I wish... I mean, I didn't do any research into the filmmaking process, and maybe I will, but I think it would be interesting to see why they chose these roles for each to recur.
And I think that's what, because of, you and I both listened to that Nerdist podcast, as you said, and I loved how articulate they all were.
I know.
And I loved the way they talked
also
about
smart
humanity.
And loved each other, and it was so beautiful.
And so maybe this is just the kind of thing where it's like an artistic failure, but the ambition is something that's worth reading about, or maybe their conversations about it are something that's worthwhile. Because I know I'm going to spend a lot more time looking at these directors, even just from, like, the paratext I've encountered, you know?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, Tom Twyker was just the most loving, amazing person on that podcast.
Atlanta's so well spoken.
All I want to do is to watch all his movies except for Cloud Atlas.
Run All the Run's, like, good. It's good. I like it.
I like
fine.
It. I really
I hear
like
really
it,
good
actually.
Things about
it.
I like
it. All right, let's get all up onto gender. So let's start with
Somni.
Do you want to start with Somni or do you want to start with Drag?
I don't care.
I don't really care. Well,
I mean,
I
guess
no
Drag would make more sense because we were just talking about, like, recast.
Yes.
So, I mean, I had a problem. I don't know the actor's name. I'm really sorry. But the actor who was cast in the old folks' home as the nurse.
Yeah.
Why did he have to be a dude acting?
Was Hugo Weaving not Nurse Noakes?
No.
Maybe.
Was he? I thought it was the guy who played Ben Whishaw's lover.
I don't know. I'm not sure.
I have no idea, obviously.
But yeah, if it was, then I take it back. Because he is supposed to be the evil villain in all of them, I think. But I could have sworn that it was Ben Whishaw's lover.
I don't know. I think I saw a joke about
it Hugo Weaving. It would make more sense than if it was Hugo Weaving playing it. Because if he is supposed to be
I didn't even see the movie. I don't have any thoughts about it.
Never mind.
So the idea of...
Because it makes sense for how the way that they've constructed the
right.
story.
Right. And I actually wanted to make that point about race because, I don't know, I actually am not... Like, I know it's problematic and I don't really have any academic anything to back it up, but I'm not necessarily of the opinion that, like, blackface and whatever it is for other races is inherently wrong, and I feel like what they were doing here was, like, thematically... Like, it was part of the theme of their movie, and I'm not... Like, I don't necessarily...
I mean, what kind of it brings up to me, because that's what I thought, but then I was like, but why couldn't they cast more Asian actors to play in the earlier roles, and why couldn't mm-hmm. they have one case of the Asian woman playing a white woman, very small, and then she plays a Spanish person.
Mm-hmm.
But why couldn't they cast more of the male leads as Asian guys? Like, mm-hmm. why is it white then has to put on Asian?
Though, mm-hmm. Halle Berry went in white face, right? I mean, like, I feel like they do it in a way, I don't know. And again, having not seen the movie, I just feel like, I think that there's a certain innocence to doing something that could be regarded as politically bad. When you do it for the theme of your art, as much as, like, probably, like, there's instances where obviously that's wildly untrue, I never felt any sort of ire towards them for doing it. I thought maybe it was a little tacky, but...
Well, I don't feel ire other than, like, you know, you could have cast an Asian man.
Yeah, and absolutely.
And not just
to
play that role, but you could have cast an Asian man to play the roles in the beginning, too.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, we know some.
We know Asian actors who control.
So instead of Wyatt, assume that it is white men, because it's...
Actually, that sentence got away from me.
Because it's the women, as you pointed out, it's Halle Berry and the Korean person, who I don't know their name, who play it. Why not cast some Asian
men? And, I mean, when we go into
Because there's, like, six white men cast.
Yeah. Mm. And when you go into it, in terms of practicality, a lot of that probably is...
Well,
like, name visibility, and
yeah,
and it sucks.
I guess, but it's not like the Asian woman is a big name.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it wasn't.
Speaking of her,
right, there you go. You can transition now.
That was
you
kind of...
You're giving us the...
You're allowed
supposed
now.
To do it.
That was kind of a bit problematic. Carol,
a bit?
Do
I want to talk about it?
Talk about it.
What about her specifically?
Just do it.
It's this whole... Her whole narrative... Of, like,
she is so pissed.
I am in such a pissy mood. It's funny the difference between pissy and pissed, isn't it?
Yeah.
Because pissed is, like, I feel...
I know. I was like, I don't feel pissy. I feel pissed. I don't know why I said pissy.
Pissy for me, like, when I'm being pissy, it's because I know I have no reason.
Yeah.
When I'm pissed, it's because something motivated.
And I, was, like,
I just
want to
say,
like,
it's interesting that you said that, because I think about pissy as, like, inherently, like, feminized.
Yeah,
and pissed.
Me
and,
too.
And so it's
so
interesting,
don't.
It's interesting that you say, like, pissy is, like, kind of irrational and, like, invalidated
yeah.
in a lot of ways.
Oh, yeah.
It's very feminine. Society. Anyway, back on track.
For sure.
You're the one that just said it was feminine.
So ingrained society. It's so ingrained that you don't even know. I'm pissed that... Okay, the whole story of, like, I understand that it's somewhat supposed to be, like, celebratory... of women, or, like, oh my god, isn't it so interesting that a woman is gonna be, like, the goddess, or, like, the revolutionary? But it's all the men around her that push her to do it. She has literally no
agency.
She's
like a vessel.
She's a vessel. They put all of the information, they tell her how she should be feeling, they tell her, like, they give her specific theorists to look at, like, it's just, who is she other than, like, people saw her and be like, hey, we could use her.
Which is exactly what
this.
Happened.
Do you think that's the sound of my
eating.
Cat eating?
Oh. Kind of fatty. I'm kidding. It's really thin. It's a really skinny cat. Scarily.
He's
so.
Gaining weight. Yeah, he looks better.
But he does look better, yeah. So I think that's super problematic.
I want to
ask super awful.
I want to ask though, because it seems knowing that the character of the Somni is an empty vessel. Could this be something that, like, she's literally like something that was created in order to function in one role, and then it, like, could this be deliberate? Could this be commentary?
Empty
is what I want to ask.
Vessel could be amazing if they learned about the world. But the thing is, people force their knowledge onto her, and she accepted it without question. I think empty. It could be interesting, but it wasn't.
Okay. It seems to me like...
Because it's like, it's also, sorry to cut you off, but it's like there's a hierarchy of like, they're right, so therefore it's okay that they're brainwashing her.
Mm-hmm. Right, I'm wondering again, like, and maybe I'm just sort of taking from the book here, but I'm also wondering if that, because she is a brainwashed character, if them brainwashing her was sort of meant to seem like more of the same. Like, because that seems like it would be narratively cohesive.
That actually is a very interesting point. Like,
I don't understand.
I don't know if this is what you mean, but, like, the idea that, like, she starts out as a brainwashed character by, like, the bad, quote-unquote, bad guys.
By Papa Saul.
But is she brainwashed or is she an empty vessel?
Well.
But she's brainwashed.
She's brainwashed.
She's created as an empty vessel. What they put on her is the brainwashing of Papa Songs.
Sure.
And then
she gets taken by the good guys, but then they brainwash her, and it is more of the same thing.
I'm just wondering.
That's
if that is the point, I think that's really interesting, but the way that it's presented is that it's supposed to be amazing, and it's supposed to be like, look at her in power, look at her talking, look at her starting this war between people, look at her lover die, and look at her be a goddess later
on
for people to praise.
They also usurp that later in the book when Tom Hanks's character in the future, and by the book I mean the movie, in the future kind of is like
that's
saying,
why you're calling it the future
saying that like she's like a goddess and she's amazing, and then Halle Berry's like she wasn't that, she was just a girl and she lived a really tragic life actually, and she's not all those things that you're making her out to be. So that actually is very interesting because that gets undermined and debunked.
I feel like there
maybe
is also
I missed that part and I did not understand it. I kind of thought at some point,
there's a lot of
also
Hugo Weaving being the devil, distracting you because.
And I really couldn't understand their accents.
Yeah,
and like the way they the true.
The
I'm
future
like,
future people were really
about.
Quite bad.
Yeah,
yeah. So actually, I think that there is it's potentially more interesting than that because of that scene where she becomes a goddess and becomes an idol, and that kind of
that
gets
undermined. Interesting.
In book, because this is the only way I can contribute to conversation.
For sure.
In book, what, like, her narrative is, like, her being interviewed before her execution. And so the documents that they have that made her a goddess are the first half of this interview. And that's what elevated her to this status. Mm-hmm. And then in the subsequent narrative, they find the second half of her document, or of the, like, thing she was, her interview, and it obviously casts her in a different light.
That's so much more interesting yet again.
I know. And
because it's all intricate. It's intricate. Her own storyline is intricate with, like, the present interview before execution and then with what's actually happening.
And what I wanted to, like, I guess before when I was asking about the linearity is I was asking about the intercuttiness more than the linearity.
Oh.
The idea.
Well, that didn't feel like it wasn't linear because it just felt like someone remembering something.
Right.
Which is very common in linear things.
Yeah. So I guess that, I don't know, I feel like...
So feminists, we're putting a feminist label on this because they kind of...
Maybe.
They undermine it a little
bit.
It's definitely not the movie because the movie sucked, but if it was good, we might call it feminist.
It kind of seems
a
little...
Yeah, it's an anti, other than that, but I guess if we all agree that kind of undermines the point of like...
Yeah.
I feel like...
It's okay to brainwash this woman because she's a woman.
I mean, I don't think... Sorry, Kate. Go ahead, Kate.
I feel like they're... was an instance in the book, and I might be making this up actually, just so that I can like feel more positively towards it, but I feel like there was an instance where what the people who were like her second brainwashers were sort of very were revealed to have some shitty things about them too. Like I feel that was a thing. So
not
I don't know.
Not in the movie.
I might be making it up though. Is it possible that this idea of, like, this brainwashed empty vessel is actually directly a commentary on, like, women and narratives about women?
What interesting.
Yeah, it is possible. In the book...
But it's not successful.
Oh, yeah, not successful. Yeah.
Well, nothing successful about the movie, but let's yeah. say...
No, okay, let's Ben Whishaw was a fox.
Yeah, and he was very good, and his storyline was very interesting.
But let's say, hypothetically, if it were to be successful, like, I think that it could certainly be a commentary, and a commentary about performativity, not unlike the Hunger Games.
Performativity? Is that the right word?
Hunger Games? Where did this come up? Because I missed a hurdle.
After we watched this, I was saying that it just proves how good the Hunger Games is.
Yeah. Because she had a little bit, the main character, as much as she, in the Hunger Games, Katniss, was put on as a savior or as a leader of a revolution, she's manipulated by both ends, but she has some agency. There's some recognition of the manipulation going on, and there's some negotiating of it.
Okay.
Whereas here, there is none of that.
Was this in Hunger Games movie, or are we talking about Mockingjay?
Mockingjay.
Okay. Next
two books, both
Catch and
Fire. Yeah, blanket spoilers for that. But
Primrose dies.
Say, but, you know, actually,
everybody dies. She chooses PETA.
Gale bombs Primrose. Gale
inadvertently kills Primrose.
Makes her decision easier.
His character dies. I forget his name.
Omar in the Wire.
Shot by a kid.
Okay.
Michael Pitt sleeps with his mom in Boardwalk Empire.
Oh my god, really? Gross.
Okay.
Dumbledore dies.
Elementary.
Snape kills him.
Stays.
But not really. Because Dumbledore knew all along it was going to happen.
But Snape really does kill
him. He does, but like it's not Dumbledore had like. I was going to say, had it coming. That's not right. Dumbledore didn't have it coming.
But Dumbledore knew it was coming.
Yeah.
I have not a real thing to say.
No.
Did you?
No.
But actually, what might be potentially interesting is that in contrasting the Hunger Games with this Somni narrative. Somni.
We are really have difficulty with that name.
Somni.
But the thing
the
is.
The Korean girl.
Spell it.
Well, the
S-O-M-N-I. Dash easy. Numbers.
While they potentially negotiate it within the Katniss's narrative in the Hunger Games, you could say that there is certainly negotiation of Sanmi's kind of role in this way, but it happens after her death. So, within another narrative, and which is, if anything,
but
well,
that's
which
not
is equally,
agency, that's not self-negotiation.
But she doesn't need to be agentic because there are women in the world who are not cast, who are treated in this way.
There are people who are treated in this way, but there are people, they have a self.
Yes.
Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, yeah, it's, I mean, we can
but
easily
it could
say,
be
like,
about representation
women,
and
you know
it
could
how, be about debunking that representation and showing that that the way those people who are treated in that way, and not that they don't have selves, but the way they are read as selfless gets debunked later on. Mm. Like, that is very progressive. Because it's not about whether or not she has a self. We don't really know what this character's self is per se, but it's that the fact that we as an audience read her as selfless and agency-less. So, and that is something that does get complicated, right? Because that reading is sort of something that kind of comes into play when they're trying to negotiate whether or not she is truly a goddess.
But I don't think that the dominant reading is supposed to be that she doesn't have agency. I think that it's supposed to be that she comes into agency.
Mm. Well, she doesn't.
Yeah, well, she doesn't. But I think that's what the dominant reading is. Mm-hmm. So, and I think it's important to keep in mind what the dominant reading is, because I don't think you can have a sub-dominant.
Whoa.
Subordinate? Subordinate reading.
Subordinate kind of implies that it's reliant on the dominant, though.
It is.
Okay.
It definitely, and that's my point.
Okay.
It's like, you can't have an alternative without knowing the dominant.
Right. Oh, that's okay. That's was
so
great word choice
important.
I made there.
Yeah.
I thought by accident.
Very good.
Well, we have a couple more minutes left. How was the gay stuff in the movie? Pretty good?
Good, yeah. Well,
yeah,
it was
great. Actually,
I mean,
it's the best part.
Yeah.
So just because Ben Whishaw's a fox, or is
he's
it?
Yeah,
fox.
No,
a totally
lot
fox.
To do
yeah.
with that, yeah.
Who does he kiss?
He kisses a non-fox.
Oh, he kissed that old guy.
Yeah, he's not that old.
He kisses two people, an old guy and a young guy.
Yeah.
He also kisses Halle Berry.
Mm.
They make love. He goes down on her.
Nice.
Wait.
Oh.
Halle
really?
Berry plays
the white woman with the nose prosthetic. Oh my god, so many nose prosthetics. I kind of loved it. I thought it was actually interesting. I mean, I knew that they were kind of pointless.
I want to say, though, what's the point of doing, like, altering their physical appearance and not just casting other actors?
Yeah.
Why?
To have the soul of the same person, I guess.
And the soul is their bodies, the actor. I mean, yeah. It's interesting to take it even more meta, which I'm not going to because I don't have the intellectual capacity.
Then I can't wait to hear what you have to say.
But I'm just going to say, it would be an interesting kind of commentary on sort of theater theory. That's the thing.
Yeah.
Theater.
I mean, I wouldn't call it theater
theory. And it's sort of like the idea that the soul is sort of the actor, right? Who's carrying the characters and whatnot.
I think that's very interesting.
I wanted to...
not a lot to say about it, but I
me
think
either,
it's very interesting.
But theater thinkers, think about it.
The only
think
the,
about that.
I wanted to,
or celebrity thinkers. There's a lot of people that talk about celebrity culture of, like, you know, you cast a star because a star has so much to bring to it. Not just an audience, but they have a persona.
Yeah.
And you see this in old Hollywood movies a lot, but you also see it in current movies. So I think that's a very interesting point.
Well, the idea of playing to type and playing against type implies that. The only other film I can really think of that does the same thing with, like, actors playing multiple parts and that being significant is in Angels in America. When
oh, so good.
Yeah, and I love it in that because everyone.
I'm so...
Meryl Streep plays, like, the old
anything.
She plays rabbi.
Like,
who else does she play?
She plays the,
she plays
Ethel,
the mom.
The person, De Niro. No, is it De Niro? Who's that actor?
Pacino,
like, plays a role in Sentencing. She plays
Ethel Rosenberg.
Mormon mom. She plays the...
She plays Joe Pitt's mother.
Meryl Streep, who plays who?
Emma Watson plays a nurse. Like,
Emma
she plays.
Emma Watson?
Nope. Yeah, no.
Nope.
Emily. Yeah. Oh.
Emma Thompson.
Oh, I feel so bad because I love Emma Thompson. Emma Thompson plays, like, an angel. She plays the angel, but she also plays.
I remember her. What about the girl in Weeds? Does she play anyone else?
She doesn't, but that's deliberate, I think. And
The Mormon gay guy, does he play anyone else?
No.
And does the gay guy play anyone else?
Not everybody.
Prior Walter plays the guy who plays, what's his name?
Guy who was just recently in Animal Practice?
Yeah, the guy from Animal Practice. he played the guy that, like, Lewis fucks in Central Park. But what I mean to say is that, like, the characters, these actors play different characters, and it's significant because, like, the author was trying to make a point about...
Yeah.
Like, the angel role is the same as a nurse role, and...
Yeah, and I understood those, because those, like, they're B characters. But the A characters don't really play anyone different.
But Prior Walter does, and he's ostensibly,
like,
the protagonist.
As a cameo as someone else?
But he plays, like, all the other ones are playing, like, I mean, my point here is that there is, like, the same idea of, like, the reusing of actors instead of casting actors. But in this case, they were... In the, like, I think it would have functioned better in theater because they would have been more visibly recognizable as the same actor, whereas they're so disguised in the HBO adaptation that sometimes you don't notice.
Also, it's just, I think it's also just more common in theater to do that.
Oh,
yeah,
of course.
So,
but it's also, it was done deliberately. Like,
in
the notes for the play, he says, like, the actor plays these three characters, and it obviously was structured a very specific way.
But it does happen a lot in plays.
Yeah.
But I think it's interesting to have that adaptation.
But then they kept it.
Film. Yeah.
Yeah.
I think that's interesting.
And but, like, in that, it was definitely, like, thematically relevant. And,
and this one was supposed to be thematically relevant as well.
Yeah. I had a different point. I don't remember what it was. Anyway.
Well, I know. We talked through it a lot.
Whatever. It's fine. I'm sure your points were really good.
We all know. We all agree. Kate, not having seen it, but it would have been better.
We
know how the movie would be better as a movie.
Just make it the book.
But and it's not particularly genderful.
Yeah.
Does that mean
so
gender
why
wonderful?
We podcast about it.
I know. Why didn't we? Hey? I mean, we had a lot of thoughts, and we can obviously make the case that linearity and form is, of course, attached to gender.
But
so
even just it doesn't need
I
to
think
be.
If
a,
anyone is going to, it should be you. But maybe we just shouldn't.
It doesn't need to be a gendered reading that we do, though. It can just be, like, a female perspective, even if it's not about the gendered thing.
Yeah, but what is a female perspective? There's no such thing as a female perspective.
It can be our specific
we should turn
perspective.
This off before she starts talking
about
herself. It can
be our specific.
Anyway, why don't you all sound off in the comments? Let us
but
know.
What is the essential female
perspective?
Nope. Turn it off. Stop it.
Come visit us at a website of onezone.com. Sound off. Let us know what you thought about the movie. If you saw the movie, tell us why you're not seeing the movie. If you're not seeing the movie. Or show us your mustaches, ladies. Us your Movember bushes.
Yeah.
Show us your Movember bushes. I don't care about putting
Isn't
some pubes up.
Isn't it interesting how
just that thing you do.
Reflex on my own sexism, where I was so quick to be like, there is no female gaze. Like, what is a universal female thing? But I'm like, male gaze, yeah, that's that. This is the male gaze. Men have it. You know?
All men have it the same way.
Really funny. I mean, funny or, like, really damaging.
Sound off. A website of onezone.com. Until next time. Happy
November.
Happy re-abomination.
Re-abomination. Happy re-abomination. His name in nothing.
Okay. He whispers to the author that I'm